You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Hello and welcome into the 27th iteration of the Coast to Coast Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, a little sick, Austin Craycraft, but I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by Dante Guarneri. How are we doing today?
I'm fully healthy, so I guess a little bit better than you so far.
Yes, that is more than I can say. But we'll fight through with the playoffs. That's what you do. You saw Draymond last night. He fought through his injury. I can do it. I do enjoy Draymond. I don't know if you have him on Snapchat, but he just he goes all out with his physical treatment, and it's enjoyable to watch as someone who can't afford all the luxuries he has.
Yeah, I mean, he's great. I go back and forth all the time whether I love him or I hate him. But right now it's love mode, and just seeing how, I guess, enthusiastic he is about just the spot he's in with the team and how well he's been playing. I think right now it's going to be love for a little bit more.
Yeah, it should be. He's been unbelievable. We'll get to the Warriors a little later on because the way they're playing, I don't know if they're top of the show material. Just because they're so good, and the Utah Jazz are good, but just not as good. But we'll start with some non-playoff related news, and sadly, it involves LeVar Ball. His son, I guess his brand, I should say, Big Baller Brand, released the Zoe 2s, Lonzo Ball's first signature shoe. The shoe itself, I don't mind it actually too much. But you can't really talk about it without getting to the price tag, which is $495, $695 if you are a size 14 or 15, and then we haven't even talked about the slides, which will be $220. So, the price is overall ridiculous. The slides look just like something that I got at a Nike outlet store for $30. I just can't explain it. Maybe you can.
I wish I could. I think that there's definitely a side of just hubris involved with this, and a lot, unfortunately, that has to do with LeVar's hubris and not even necessarily his more talented son, Lonzo. But you know, after getting shut out by all big sneaker brands and Nike, Adidas, and Reebok, it's kind of it's almost sad that they're willing to go to this go this far to try to grow this brand that you know really isn't being created naturally, but rather just kind of forced into the spotlight by LeVar.
Yeah, it's pretty almost, I don't know. I'm not a fan of it. I think that if LeVar wasn't in the picture, Lonzo would have signed with Nike just like he normally would have, and he would have gotten a decent amount of money. I don't think he would have gotten a signature shoe because they don't really give those things out for free. But him and his family, I guess, wanted that shoe, so that's what he got. The price tag.
I think the problem I'm having is that initially I saw the price. I was obviously, like everyone else, dumbfounded. But the bigger surprise to me is that it seems like there's no wiggle room in this price. From my understanding, they'll be delivering these shoes on November 24th, so months from now, meaning that in this period of time, there will be no drop in prices. You're going to pre-order these shoes. You'll get them for $500 in 6 months or so, and that's that. I figure that this could be a huge marketing ploy by LeVar. Have the prices so high, make people talk about it, and 2 weeks from now, maybe drop them down to a normal person price. But it doesn't seem that way. So I really don't understand this. Even from like an economic perspective, it doesn't really make any sense for them to be shopping their shoes like this.
No, it doesn't. I mean, I didn't see anyone on Twitter who said, yeah, I'm going to go buy these.
People, but they were talking about it. And that's what I think LeVar Ball loves most.
Yeah, Darren Rovell was saying, I don't know what your thoughts on Darren Rovell are. I don't think it's ever come up. But regardless, he was talking about how LeVar Ball's the big winner because everyone's talking about him and his brand right now. So those shoes got plenty of attention, more than probably any other shoe of the last year, just in terms of just overall talking about it. So just that'll find its way into people buying them. And I don't know who buys them, but I'm sure a couple, more than one will buy them. And I didn't know that they're not coming out until November. So that's interesting. And then once you get them, you better order the right size. Otherwise you can't return them. But you didn't want to order the $1,000 pair where they're signed and then you get a nice little LED box.
Yeah, I would maybe put anything else in that LED box, maybe turn it into like an aquarium or something. I prefer just not to have anything to do with Big Baller Brand, mostly because of the price tag, but even more so because LaVar Ball is one of the worst people that the NBA has ever had to encounter.
Okay, well, let's transition into, I don't know if this is much of a happier topic. Is this a happier topic? I don't know. But the Atlanta Hawks are going in a new direction in terms of their front office. I don't know how much of this is by each person's choice or just the overall feel of the organization, but Mike Budenholzer will relinquish his role as president, will stay on as coach and still be a part of the front office, but not as high up. And that's the same for Wes Wilcox, who will no longer be GM. He'll still be in the front office, but they are currently seeking a new president of basketball ops, and it looks like they might be headed in somewhat of a new direction. I think the GM and that president will have interesting conversations in terms of what to do with guys like Paul Millsap, what to do with guys like Dwight Howard. But overall, how do you feel about this move after a team who's made the playoffs for I don't even know how many straight years and are kind of always just there?
Well, it certainly feels like that the team peaked in a way, right? Going back a couple of years. That 60-win team. They had DeMar Carroll. All five of those guys were player of the month. But really what it comes down to is that Mike Budenholzer was probably not as prepared for this dual role as president and coach.
Hey, I'll say one thing, though. He's been better than Doc.
That's totally fair, and I think that's a pretty low bar to set for yourself if Doc Rivers, who refuses to sign the right pieces, is the person you're marking yourself against. But at any rate, I do think that Budenholzer has done a pretty good job, along with Wes Wilcox, over the past few years. But really, he's a coach. He comes from the Pop system. What he should be focusing on is the coaching, is the strategy for his team. But you're right. They are in an interesting position going forward, especially considering that their best player is abled and probably will opt out of his contract in this offseason.
Yeah, that's probably the most. I don't know what a new GM will come and do, because you kind of have some pieces already set in stone in terms of you have Kent Bazemore for another 3 years, you have Dennis Schroeder for, I guess it's four because he extended. You have a couple, I guess not rookies anymore, in Torian Prince, DeAndre Bembry. Prince was actually halfway decent in the playoffs, which was a pleasant little surprise. Tim Hardaway's contract situation, I think, is also very interesting, but I think we do have to go to the top in Paul Millsap. He does have an opt-out in his contract, and everyone expects him to exercise it, because this could be his last big payday, as he's 32, I believe. I'll look that up. But I would assume this is his last big contract. So we saw him last time he re-signed with the Hawks. It was only a 3-year deal. Maybe we see the same thing. What are you expecting in terms of a Paul Millsap offseason?
Yeah, I think it's pretty likely that he'll opt out, considering that this would give him just that one more year left on the deal. And like you said, he's probably looking to secure probably something in this ballpark around $21 to $23 million a year, but just over a longer span of time. You're right, he is 32 years old, so this must be his last chance. And in my own opinion, I don't know if that being in Atlanta is his best chance to win, if that's a concern for him. But if it is money, of course, they do have his bird rights, so they could give him a little bit more money, a little more cushion going down the line that he might actually want. But I think the bigger issue is that, Dwight Howard is taking up almost 20% of their cap. and not really servicing them as well as they want them to. So I don't know if this might be the spot, but I do have one place that I do think that he could fit.
One more thing before you get to that, because I know you're chomping at the bit to tell us your destination. But his last year of this option is $21.5 million, and I assume he could get that in this year's free agency because he's still an extremely productive player, amongst the most underrated stars in the league. He was an all-star the past year and has been for multiple seasons. The other thing to keep in consideration, because I assume the team that you're going to say isn't Atlanta, because that would be kind of anticlimactic, but I know he's very comfortable there. There's a reason he re-signed there when he had more money with the Orlando Magic in another year. And he went to school at Louisiana Tech, which isn't too far away. So I think Atlanta's just a very comfortable place. But let's hear where Dante says Paul should or will go.
All right. So looking at the 2017-2018 cap situation for this team, they would have to renounce all four players that they currently have on their cap hold, as well as getting rid of one non-guaranteed Jordan Hill contract. Paul Millsap in Minnesota makes a lot of sense. While they don't have exactly all the pieces that make them an instant contender, I think trotting out a lineup of Rubio, LaVine, Wiggins, Millsap, and Karl Anthony Towns is one that is more than formidable even in the West, and only a couple pieces away from being a legitimate title contender.
I like it. And I think Millsap is a pretty good bridge piece in terms of maybe next year he's the best player on the team, but he won't be thereafter, so he can kind of fade back. And he's still going to be productive because he's a really smart player, good defensively, and that's something the Timberwolves badly need, and I'm sure Tibbs would love a guy like Millsap, because in Chicago, I don't think he really had anyone who's like 6'8", scrappy, really strong. Taj Gibson was kind of him light, but he couldn't really do anything on offense.
I think that one. You know, they need a veteran. I think that's something they desperately needed last year. Kevin Martin really the only voice there, and Rubio is serving as some kind of pseudo veteran. But looking at the cap situation and just the positional need, I think it does make a lot of sense. I just don't know if, like you said, if he's comfortable with leaving the South.
Yeah, that it's and going to Minnesota, because that's a little
yeah,
it's a little bit different.
That's the opposite. Yeah,
I don't know. His free agency will be very interesting. What do you think people are willing to give him? Do you think they're going to be willing to give him the full 4-year max? Because it might be easy to say here that we probably shouldn't, but that might be what a team has to do to get him.
Well, I mean, very possibly. I mean, he's coming off one of his best years. He averaged the most points he ever has in a per game at 18.1 at 31 years old. So this guy's still not out of gas just yet. I think that we could see something similar to what Orlando gave him, like you mentioned. But I do think the figure is around this $21 to $23 million mark that he's currently getting, just extended over a couple more years.
Yeah, that's fair. I could see him going a little bit more per year, but I think 3 years for a team is still a good call, maybe without an option even, but we will see. Do you have an idea of how much Tim Hardaway is going to get? Because I think it's going to be higher than most people think.
Yeah, I think that's hard to say. He's a really interesting character. I'm sure he's going to go out there and ask for a lot more than he's worth, and rightfully so. But could I see it settling around like $16, $17 million a year? In my mind, I think that's possible and probable, especially considering there is somewhat of a increase this year. But I don't know how much around the league he's, I guess he's viewed as a premier guard. So I don't know. It'd be surprising if it went over that 17, but I wouldn't be surprised if it went to 17.
Yeah, that's a huge number still, though. That's 4 years, $68 million. That's a lot of money. And I I believe the Hawks can match. If I still think he's on his rookie deal.
Yeah, I think
that's
they
still
could.
A lot of money, but it's just what a wing goes for in this day and age when there's so few. And he came on strong during the playoffs. He's a quality shooter, and I think he'll fit nicely for some team. Now that we've kind of gotten out of the way all the non-playoff news, I think we should delve right into the playoffs. What series is most interesting to you at this stage? Should we talk about Washington Boston's fight? Should we talk about San Antonio Houston, which might be the most interesting going forward?
Yeah, I guess we can start with last night's Boston Washington game. I think that was definitely one of the more interesting games of these playoffs, and just keep bringing up in my mind that these two teams might actually like legitimately hate one another.
I think they do.
It's something that we talked about even during the regular season, where the NBA was kind of just giving out slaps on the wrist for in-game altercations, interactions. And last night we kind of saw it come really to the surface, and Oubre just, as was said multiple times last night, spearing Kelly Olynyk. I don't know if spearing was the right word. I think the Edge from WWE would have some qualms about that phrasing. But at any rate, he knocked him down pretty easily. And 7 technicals over the span of that game, an ejection, two other people getting 2 tees. Overall, this is definitely a fun series to watch, if only because of the on-court battles that are going on and the clear hate between the teams.
Yeah, Kelly Olynyk setting those dirty screens on Oubre kind of set him off to go after him, and then you saw Brandon Jennings and Terry Rozier actually going at it for a while, and I thought that was pretty interesting to watch. Brandon Jennings just seems like the guy who talks a lot, and I guess it got into Terry Rozier, so they had some banter, got a nice double technical together. They even got to the point where Brad Stevens was very animated, which is pretty rare from a guy who's pretty laid back typically. And then the on-court performance, the Wizards kind of wiped the Celtics off the floor in this one in game 3 at home after Isaiah's enormous game 2, which was pretty unbelievable. He only took 13 shots, I believe, in game 3, Isaiah did, so that obviously has to change. But overall, the story has to be this rivalry, and I think it's no doubt a rivalry. And we even saw it a bit during the regular season, so just the fact that it's coming to fruition in the postseason, it's kind of exciting, honestly, just because it's a little bit different than what we've seen, because most playoff series are pretty physical, but you don't usually get that emotional hatred.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, I think, maybe starting to pour over a little bit more and more into the actual play of Boston. Like you talked about, Rozier kind of lost his cool. Smart had played pretty awfully last night, having 8 turnovers. But just kind of like maybe switching it, kind of considering it over to the on-court play, it just really surprised. The most surprising thing to me has been just how the Wizards have really dominated, at least from their starters. Throughout this series, they've just kind of laid into this Boston team and kind of outmatched them in every way possible.
Their starters are an extremely good unit. Last night, all 5 starters scoring in double figures, with John Wall leading the way with 24 points. Otto Porter was at 1.7 for 7 in the first half. They used a 22-0 run in the first quarter that kind of just ended this game, because every other quarter was pretty close other than 39-17 the first quarter. So the Wizards are rearing and ready to go. Celtics will obviously make some adjustments. It's just whether Scott Brooks is a step ahead, because they really need to get the series back to 2-2 and make it a best of 3, I think, in order to do that. Game 4 is on Sunday. 3 games on Sunday. That will be the middle game of the day. And I think, in terms of adjustments, I think that's going to be one of the more interesting games of the season. The other game last night, the Golden State Warriors defeating the Utah Jazz by a score of 115-104. Draymond Green, the story in this one, he did go down with a bit of an injury, but he came back. Looks to be okay. It just sounds like it locked up on him, but it shouldn't be anything too severe. He should be ready to go. Finishes with 21 points, 6 assists, 7 rebounds. Shot it lights out from 3. His defense is still just stupid good, I'd say. I think I've dubbed him my favorite warrior on this team. There are times when I hate him too, but typically not too often. Durant has 25, Steph has 23, just kind of your typical game. This one was closer than game one for sure. But overall, I think what we've kind of talked about, I still don't know how many losses are coming this Golden State team's way.
Well, if George Hill can't play maybe the rest of the series, or is limited the rest of the series, then certainly this will.
You don't think Shelvin Mack is as good as George Hill?
You know what? I don't think so just yet. I think that maybe one day Shelvin Mack can aspire to be just as above average as George Hill is, but for right now, I don't think that he is the answer, and neither is Dante Exum, and that's for sure.
I think that's what kind of hurts this team more, is that Shelvin Mack, his like 16 minutes a game, he's now up to 30, which kind of hurts, but those 16 minutes a game are being replaced by mostly Dante Exum and a little bit of Raul Neto. And I can tell you one thing, Raul Neto is not the solution to any of your problems.
Certainly not. And I don't think that anyone can even should even be on the court with Steph Curry. I'd rather have Bradley Beal's son out there trying to mimic his father's shots for this Utah team at the one than any of these guards right now. The other problem that Utah's having, obviously, is that Draymond Green has just been the force you were mentioning, and he's even really dominated play from the center position, kind of hurting Gobert on that end. Not to mention the fact that Gordon Hayward in this series is 5 of 17 from 3. That's just not going to cut it if your best player is just unable to hit it from long range when they're playing arguably the best team from 3 at any given time. So, yeah, I do think that this one may be quicker than I expected, just because Gordon Hayward's kind of lost his rhythm, and George Hill being out is just really going to hurt that team.
I mean, I don't know how much slack you can really... I don't know how much criticism you can really give Gordon Hayward. He's been pretty really good, and most of those threes I think that he's taking aren't, it's not like they're uncontested. He has to work really hard for them. They're pull up off the dribble. He had 33 points last night. I don't know if this is going to be uncompetitive enough for him to think about leaving Utah, especially with probably the money difference they'll be able to give him. But he's been really good. Gobert is good. They made a starting lineup change, starting Joe Johnson at the 4, which I think is pretty interesting. I guess he's somewhat comparable to Draymond in terms of just size, but ability not as much, especially the one thing that the Jazz have to be able to do to beat this Warriors team is beat them on the glass, and they just haven't done that. Gobert had 16 rebounds, but it didn't really matter. It wasn't enough, as they still got beat on the glass by 8 rebounds. So you just have to be able to beat the Warriors in that facet for sure if you want to even have a chance, especially when they're shooting 45% from 3 and almost 50% total from the field.
Yeah, and just a kind of a quick shout out to Mike Brown, right? I think that a lot of credit needs to go to him and his ability to just kind of step into this role when Steve Kerr hasn't been feeling his best with his back and all. And one of the things that I liked is that he's been really leaning on the lineup of death more and more, and that lineup is basically impossible to beat. So the more he goes to that, the more I think we'll see this series and maybe the playoffs overall kind of just snowball into a Warriors 16-0, like has been mentioned in the past.
Right, and I think the thing about Brown is that, first of all, shout out for his son to committing here after graduating grad transferring from New Mexico. He's coming to play in Oregon for his senior year, so that's exciting. But also, I think that if this Warriors team was struggling, he would be taking a ton of blame. But since they're succeeding, he's just like nobody's giving him too much credit. He's just kind of sitting there with his hands behind his back. But I still think tons of credit, because it's not as I know coaching a team with four of the top 20 players in the league probably isn't the most difficult thing in the world, but it's still the playoffs and you still have to make adjustments, and he's done a pretty good job with that. And I'm sure Steve Kerr has done some coaching from the outside, but Brown still deserves a ton of credit, like you said. All right, let's move over to the other Western Conference series. The San Antonio Spurs and the Houston Rockets are currently tied 1-1. Tony Parker is out for the rest of the playoffs, the rest of the season, after rupturing his left hamstring. So I think that is certainly a detriment to this team, but they were able to make some huge adjustments after Houston, really frankly, they dismantled them in game one of that series. They were able to bounce back. Gave James Harden some real troubles after he only had 13 points, really struggled from the field, couldn't get into the flow of the offense like he was able to before. And Kawhi Leonard is just at a different level. So I think this series just takes another turn. I think there's going to be more adjustments in game three tonight. And I think this series is just shaping up to be probably the best of the playoffs so far.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think definitely the concern, like you mentioned, is that Tony Parker is out now, and he's kind of been the second guy there. LaMarcus Aldridge still kind of struggling in this series so far. But I think that we'll get to see a little bit more of Kawhi if there is any more that Kawhi can do. He's already averaging 28, 9, and 7 in this series, and kind of just being the one steady piece to this team. I guess now we'll get to see a little bit more of Patty Mills and maybe Anderson at the one. I don't know, Simmons at the one. It'll be interesting to see how they decide to give those minutes that Tony Parker had. He was averaging 24 minutes a game in this series so far, and probably some more had he not gotten hurt. So it'll be interesting, I guess.
I think Patty Mills will get a little step up in minutes, and then the other guy that you'll get to see play, I think, is DeJounte Murray, the rookie out of Washington. He got some run throughout the regular season. It's a guy that I'm really high on personally. I know he's not going to be able to make a huge impact in this series. He just has to not kill them when he's out there. At least he's a little younger, a little more spry. He's probably still going to get torn apart. I don't know how much of a sieve he is on defense, because if he's that bad, James Harden will pick him out and he will destroy him in the pick and roll. So Pop will have to adjust with that. But yeah, Kyle Anderson might get a few more minutes as the lead ball handler. Kawhi will obviously have to take it more, just because Tony Parker, he squirms around those pick and rolls, and then he also he initiates so much offense. So it's just a huge adjustment for this team, and hopefully this isn't the last we ever see Tony Parker play, I have to say, though, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. I hope we get it maybe a couple more years out of him. I still think that Kyle Anderson could be the answer there. I don't know why his minutes fluctuate as much as they do. I know that he does struggle a little bit on both ends, but given the series and given the matchups that Harden forces with the pick and roll, his size kind of works to their advantage in all these pick and roll schemes. So I would be surprised if they only went to Murray to take over for Parker, but I suppose it works best if they kind of split the duties amongst a bunch of their bench players, and probably giving a little bit more to Patty Mills.
Yeah, how does that work out on the defensive end, you think? Let's say just against the starters, the Rockets will have Beverly. Do you put Anderson on Beverly or Ariza?
If you go Green, Leonard, Anderson, Aldridge, and Dedmon, then yeah, I would say Anderson ends up on Ariza. You can put Green onto Beverly, and then Leonard just taking Harden, and that combo right there of Anderson and Leonard, I think is pretty formidable. No.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I think we don't really see too much of Kawhi on Harden because Danny Green's a good defender, and you just don't want to burn him out because that's so exhausting. But you can't say enough about Kawhi Leonard. You have Skip Bayless saying he's the best player in the NBA, which we don't have to get into because we've already talked about one schmuck in this show, in LeVar. But it's not an outlandish case to make at this point.
He was my MVP for the year. I think, you know, that he's certainly up there, at least in the top three in the league. I think it's always hard to say that he's the best player when obviously LeBron James is the best player in the league right now and in the world. But certainly this series comes down to how much can Kawhi pull up this team? How much more can he do given that he's already, like I said, averaging a 28-9-7 in this series? He's going to have to up his numbers to maybe Russ levels for this team to keep moving forward.
Yeah, because I don't have the team page in front of me, but I assume Tony Parker's their second leading scorer in the playoffs. So they have to replace all those points. I think getting Aldridge going is going to be huge because I don't think we talk about how ineffective he is. You have Shea Serrano on Twitter calling him "Lol Marcus," just because he hasn't been good, and I think he doesn't catch too much slack just because he's in the San Antonio system. Because I just don't think he's been too terribly good throughout the playoffs. And even during the regular season, he wasn't that great. He just got his 16 a game from basic Spursiness. So he has to step up big time. You'll see other guys just get the ball more, so they'll have more opportunities to score. And then I think, as much as we're talking about the offense, I think the defense is still going to be the key. Containing Harden, you shut down a bunch of his angles. You didn't let him kick out to wide open 3-point shooters. You didn't let him have those easy lobs. You kind of had him guessing in terms of, oh, should I throw this lob or should I take it all the way to the hole myself? So I think they did a good job of that, and they didn't foul too much either, which is always important when you're playing James Harden.
Yeah, I completely agree. I do think a lot of it also comes down to Aldridge's play, like you said. I'm just not sure what role he might have in this series. Because of just the difficulty matchup-wise, I think San Antonio isn't as equipped to play this Houston team as spread out as they are. And going to two bigs on a traditional two-big offense has been definitely hurting them. And you know, looking at the minutes spread already in this series, it seems as if that seems like where they're most comfortable, having LaMarcus playing 55 minutes and Powell 51 minutes as two of their more leading minutes played players on the team. So I really don't know. I think that I'm really, really interested to see on how Pop adjusts again, because obviously he made the changes necessary between games one and two to lead to that blowout win. But now without Parker, it's going to be really, really something for this team.
I think they're against the odds at this point. I think you'd have to make Houston the favorite in the series. And then the final playoff series that we have yet to touch, frankly, because I don't have a whole heck of a lot of interest in talking about it, is Cleveland-Toronto. I don't really see any way Toronto wins this series. LeBron is too good. Their offense is too good. I don't know if they're going to face a challenge until the finals. Is there any chance of Toronto? And if not, do either the teams in the other semifinal give you any hope of contending with this Cavs team?
I think Washington probably offers the best shot. I think I overestimated Toronto's ability, and fortunately PJ Tucker's ability. I think now they're starting to maybe even lean too much on Norman Powell, going from one end to the other. It was the case last series where he emerged and he looked great, and that was all fine and well, but now he's shooting 6 of 17 from the field. He's got the most fouls on the team through two games, and it seems like he might not be the answer anymore for those lineup changes for the Raptors. And so far, it's just been a blowout. I mean, I don't think you're going to expect Channing Frye to come in and make all the threes that he did every single game like he did in game two, but these games just haven't felt close at all.
No, I feel like we doubt it every postseason, but each of the past two when Cleveland's been there, they just, for some reason, don't miss threes in the playoffs. I don't know, or for half their playoff games. Last game, they shot 54% from three on 33 attempts. That's insane. And you add that to LeBron having 39, and you're dead. LeBron, I don't know if we've ever seen him as this good of a three-point shooter, which is kind of terrifying, I think, because it doesn't take as much energy bullying your way into the hoop as it does just to settle for a three-pointer. And if he's making those, he's just at a whole nother level. I just enjoy watching Kyrie in the playoffs because he actually tries. I think he's honestly kind of frustrating, just in terms of, I think that he could be an all NBA player if he just put the effort in every game. He doesn't really try on offense. I mean defense until the playoffs. Offense, he's like, oh, I'm gonna try for 4 minutes, get 11 straight points, and then I'll back off. It's just kind of frustrating with a player of his talent.
Yeah, and I mean, you go to game two, and you'll see DeRozan really wasn't himself in that game. A lot of it having to do with just the way the Cavs have been playing him. But he's also just not finishing some buckets. He hasn't really looked all too great. And obviously, the struggles in the postseason for Kyle Lowry have kind of continued. So, I do think that this team is kind of met its match, and season is most likely over for them, I'd say.
Yeah, they'll probably win one game at home just because that's what happens in the NBA. But especially Valanciunas played well in that last game. I think this is a matchup that he can fare well in, because last season he's a little bit hobbled in this series in the Eastern Conference Finals. Of course, Corey Joseph, he's going to get his 22 a game. You just have to expect that if you're the Cavs. It's just going to happen. Just let it happen. Kyle Lowry's been fine. Ibaka's been fine. They're really trying anything to give them a spurt, a jump. So I don't know. I feel like the second round we talked about in the first round, has it been kind of underwhelming?
So far, yeah. I mean, we haven't really seen too many close games besides those in the Wizards Boston series. Has kind of just been one-sided affairs. Even last night's Utah Golden State game, where Utah made it competitive, it just never felt
like it was out of grasp. Yeah,
yeah, and I mean the Warriors have literally led the entire series. So it's, you know, it is maybe a little frustrating, and this is where you get to the point where, like, oh, okay, well, the good teams rise to the top. But hopefully that Spurs Rockets series remains competitive in some way.
It carries the round. Closer.
Yeah, definitely.
That's the hope. I think Boston Washington has that potential. It's just that when half the series, I feel like I'm not terribly interested in. Like, I like the basketball part of it, just because they're both incredible offenses. But you're not going to get too many close games. I don't know. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that tonight's Cleveland-Toronto game is going to be a close game. I don't know if that means it's good, but I think it's going to be close, because with Toronto, I don't know how many good games you get all the time.
Yeah, I think they'll come out strong. If DeRozan does try to do too much, I think that's where they'll really kind of have some issues. But yeah, a lot of it has to do with just that those two-guard play. And really trying to limit LeBron. Obviously, you're not going to be able to stop him. And if everybody's on again like they were in game two, then that one will quickly end like it did in the last one.
Yeah, I think that's all my playoff thoughts. I feel like we broke down the NBA landscape well. I think that'll just about do it for us here on the Coast to Coast Basketball Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Coast to Coast, the number two, not the word. I appreciate you all for joining us. You can follow us both on Twitter on there. Anything else you really want to plug, Dante?
Not too much. Just keep watching the NBA playoffs and keeping up with this podcast.
Yes, you absolutely should. Tweet us in some questions if you'd like. We're thinking about a mailbag question, a mailbag episode eventually, so keep that in mind, and we will talk to you guys all in the next 7 or 8 days or so. So thanks for listening.